I want us to get started. Thank you, everybody who's made the time to come. I appreciate that greatly, and I know that all of our city council members do as well. I will note for the voice record that all of our city council members are here, that our city administrator and our city attorney and our city engineer are here as well. There is an agenda that has been presented and posted. I would ask that we add an item that has come up just in the last 2 days under new business. If we could add an item to recognize the creators of the Berkeley Lake Pens program and to recognize and congratulate its first winner. So do I hear a motion regarding the agenda?
I make a motion that we accept that amendment. No.
With my suggestion?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Do I hear a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, any discussion? All in favor? Thank you, that's unanimous. We have no public hearing scheduled tonight, but we have the consent agenda that I would call to your attention, which includes the minutes from our last city council meeting on January 18th, our statewide mutual aid agreement renewal, and I would entertain a motion regarding the consent agenda items.
I'd like to motion to approve all items on the consent agenda.
Do I hear a second?
I second that.
Okay, Chip moves, Scott seconds. Any discussion? All in favor? Thank you. That's unanimous. Under old business, Lee, would you speak to us, please, about the possible rezoning amendments that we discussed last time?
Yes, ma'am. O-24-251 is a proposed amendment to the zoning map to reclassify property located at 4477 and 4487 Peachtree Industrial Boulevard, tax parcel number 6268043 and 6268044, from Gwinnett County Annex Neighborhood Commercial to Light Industrial. In addition to the reclassification of property, three concurrent variances are sought for inclusion. Those variances are as follows: a modification of the required 75-foot undisturbed buffer between R100 and M1 to eliminate the buffer adjacent to tax parcel 6268019 and impose a 25-foot building setback instead. Number two, reduction of the 10-acre M1 district area minimum to 4.996 acres. And number three, reduction of the 75-foot front setback to 11.11 feet along approximately 49.53 feet of the Peachtree Industrial right-of-way jog into the property. Staff recommended denial of the request. The Planning and Zoning Commission recommended conditional approval of the request, and the ordinance is presented here tonight for second read consideration.
Do I hear a motion in that regard?
Yes, I'd like to make a motion to place O-24-251, an ordinance to amend the zoning map of the City of Berkeley Lake, to reclassify property located at 4477 and 4487 Peachtree Industrial Boulevard from Gwinnett County Annexed Neighborhood Commercial to Light Industrial on second read.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Scott moves and Rodney seconds. Any discussion? All in favor?
No. I think we have some discussion that we'd like to have.
I'm sorry. I didn't see anybody's hand up.
Sorry.
Okay, who would like to ask a question? We have a bunch of people here.
I have a question first for the city attorney.
Okay.
And this is regarding the bond that's been proposed. Is there any way that bond could be extended to help protect our lake?
I don't recommend it. The ordinance that the condition is based upon is only intended to protect immediately downstream owners. This is the bond has been drafted to protect the immediate downstream property. I think that if you get beyond that, especially if you go across a public road into another privately held body of water, I think that creates an issue, and I don't recommend doing that.
Do we hear any other questions or discussion?
Well, I've got a statement and some questions that I'd like to read. These are concerns and questions. Some of these concerns and questions might be answered with clear explanations, but I fully expect that some of these concerns will need to be addressed with changes to the site plan, the letter of intent, the application, the rezoning request, the variance request, or some combination of all those plans and documents. I'd also like to preface my remarks by saying that this business seems to have the potential to be a good neighbor to our residents and our lake. The city and our citizens would be wise to consider that there may be other possible businesses and activities at this site that have greater potential harm to our city, and some of those might not require any zoning changes or variance requests. From my perspective, the applicant and the team of architects and engineers have been stretching the absolute limits of the property and stretching the zoning and planning restrictions that are in effect for the property. The site plan shows what appears to be the maximum possible warehouse building size that will physically fit on the property, and many of the variances are required to build to those dimensions. Furthermore, due to the magnitude of the plans, the grading effort to prepare the land for a building of this size probably represents the worst-case scenario for land disturbance and runoff during the site prep and building phase. The applicant also wishes to build two buildings on a single plot of land against our ordinances and is seriously stretching the definition of an accessory structure instead of conforming to our ordinances. I would ask the applicant to consider if the scope and the scale of the building plan can be reduced to any degree. We also have a very sensitive residential area to the northeast of the property. With the applicant planning to build the largest possible collection of impervious surfaces allowed in terms of roofs, driveways, and parking lots, the volume of runoff from the property will go from near zero today from a normal rain event to basically shedding every drop of rainwater that hits this property into a downstream waterway and thus into Berkeley Lake and thus into the Chattahoochee River. Even if all of that water is crystal clear, the volume alone is enough to give me pause. Has the applicant and the team of engineers considered converting any of those surfaces to pervious solutions? Lastly, I'd like to address the bond and the related arrangements that have been proposed. I'm not sure that a $250,000 bond would be enough, even though I understand this amount was estimated by the city's engineer. We've had considerable inflation over the past year, and historically, transporting removed silt to an upland disposal site, if one can be found, has been remarkably expensive for both private Berkeley Lake homeowners and the association. On a positive note, I'm happy to see that the proposal, that the bond will remain in effect for 3 years after the completion of construction. I'm glad to see this longer period being agreed upon so we can confirm that the site and any new vegetation and runoff has been stabilized. I think that we, that's the city and Builderstone, need to do all we can to protect the downstream pond, the lake, and the river. It will certainly be impacted by this ambitious development. Well, I personally would like to see a second opinion on the size of the bond, and I would be in favor of seeing the bond increased.
Okay. Any other comments from or questions from
our... Yeah, I actually have some specific questions, okay. And the first ones are for the petitioner. So if you could answer some of these this evening, that would be very helpful. It's my understanding that Builderstone will be warehousing stone slabs at the proposed facility on Peachtree Industrial. Where will the stone be cut?
I just want us to listen to all of the questions and then answer these questions or answer.
Which we can we do one at a time? I'd like you to answer one at a time.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you'll. No, go ahead and say your name and all the general pattern we have.
I'm importer and distributor. We don't cutting our warehouse. Our customer, some stone cutting fabricator, our customer will be cutting. I'm not cutting the stone.
Okay, thank you.
I'm just going to help expand a little bit.
Okay.
Please identify yourself.
I'm Wendy Crady. I'm the land use attorney. So on this, you think of them as fabricators. So you are going to have your kitchen redone, and you're going to have custom countertop. So the fabricator would buy these slabs, have it delivered maybe to the site or to their own location, and then customize it. So the cutting doesn't happen there. Remember, this is wholesale. Okay. So it's going to go to kind of the end user who fabricates it into the final product, whatever that is.
Okay. My next question is, these stone slabs are fairly large, so I'm assuming that when they come in, they're coming in on large trucks, 18-wheeler-sized trucks?
Yeah.
Okay. And approximately how many of those trucks are going to be coming in and out every day?
Our three trucks, small, medium, and big size, I think most common every time each truck one trip, taking a one trip.
So once a day?
Yes, okay. Daily each truck approximately one trip.
Okay, thank you. All right. My next question has to do with why you believe you need a variance modifying the 75-foot buffer adjacent to tax parcel 6268019 to eliminate the 75-foot undisturbed buffer and imposing a 25-foot building setback in its place. Can you explain that?
Sure, I'm happy to explain that. So that parcel in particular, it's owned by Ryman. And it's kind of, I'm sure you're aware of that, these two very small, not small, but long and thin. One is industrial and one is residential. So we've asked, we contacted Ryman to see what they would do, and they told us...
Ryerson.
And they said they weren't aware they actually owned that property, so that didn't go very far. But one of the reasons is to be able to allow room, particularly to be able to plant trees in that area. We did, of course, agree there can be a 25-foot setback, so no building would be built on that 25-foot setback.
But could you not modify the footprint of the building to be a little smaller and therefore leaving that buffer in place?
I think they've gone, this Builderstone has gone to great lengths to make the site work. And because they weren't able to use the existing retaining pond area that was in the back, that was originally planned, this is part of changing the site plan around to make everything work. If you were able, and maybe you have, seen the original site plan and how that was to be, one of the issues there is that there was a very large, existing area for retention pond. My client has agreed not to use that area and now has decided, agreed to put a retention pond or a bioretention pond outside of the area for the retention pond. So what that does is create a very large 75-foot setback on Mr. Holbin's property line. So this is about doing the best they can with the spaces there and making concessions to the city for some of the things that the city really wanted. And the city really wanted a 75-foot setback in Mr. Holbin's property.
And then why do you believe you need a variance modifying the 75-foot M1 front setback requirement to 11.11 feet along approximately 49.53 feet of the Peachtree Industrial Boulevard right-of-way jog into the property? Because isn't that where the stormwater pipe is? And where that easement is?
So just to take a quick look at the plan, that would be, oh, thank you. That would be this little area right here. Mm-hmm. Now, on some historical maps, there is no setback. And on some, there's a setback as if this was along the road right here. So... if you put in a gigantic setback, that really takes off a lot of the property there. So we've asked that the setback be moved back to be even with the setback that is all across right here. So to remove that awkward setback, I don't see that it provides any particular use. It would not interfere with this that's right here, but it would create the exact same building line setback across the entire length of Peachtree Industrial.
Okay, thank you. That's all that I
have for you.
Yeah, I serve as a liaison between the city and the Homeowners Association, and at our recent meeting, the Homeowners Association, they had strong opinions, and I request Bill Lyons to come up and speak to those.
Okay.
Right there.
Bill, tell us your address like we
want to hear. Address? Mm-hmm. Okay. Bill Lyons, 127 Lakeshore Drive. I'll be brief. As president of BLHA, on behalf of the homeowners of Berkeley Lake, we would like to express our concern over the environmental impact this project potentially has on our community, as Mr. Holdman has extensively outlined and unfortunately experienced in the past on several occasions. We are particularly concerned about the compliance with the volume of flow of water into municipal, county, state, and federal waterways. Additionally, we object to the 30-foot retaining wall and the 40-foot building height, both of which will be visible from Lakeshore Drive and would constitute a visual encroachment on our residential properties. Thank you.
First of all, I thank you. You're right. I appreciate the support we've had from staff, from PNZ, from many citizens. And this is an involved case. And I really appreciate hearing this detail here tonight. There's more items there that I'm learning just hearing you. So I thank everybody for that. We got a big decision to make, and I appreciate it.
Rebecca?
I'd like to ask our city engineer a few questions.
Okay, Jenny. Would you identify yourself for the voice record, please?
Yeah, I'm Jenny Olivo with Keck and Wood. I'm the city engineer.
Thank you.
All right. Can you talk to me about how stormwater management is calculated and the difference between flow and volume?
Yes. So the Georgia Stormwater Manual sets out requirements for stormwater management, and one of which is volume reduction in the first 1 inch of runoff, which the applicant has shown that they should be meeting in a bioretention area that's being constructed. That bioretention area would remove 7,000 cubic feet of the runoff leaving the site, the impervious area leaving the site. After that requirement in the stormwater manual, everything else has to do with flow rate reduction. There's nothing in the manual that requires a volume reduction after that. So, for example, you have a wooded site and you may have 10,000 cubic feet of water running off the site at a certain flow rate. If you pave the site, you're going to have more volume and you're required to hold that volume back and release it slowly over time. So the flow rate, the amount of volume over time, would be reduced. However, the total volume over the given period of time would be larger. So that's the purpose of a detention pond. It holds it back so that in hopes that the peak flows from other areas could hit whatever waterway is downstream before the peak flows from the site that's being developed hit that water.
Okay, thank you. So I'm not an expert, but the two properties in question appear to have some areas with challenging topography that may require some significant earth-moving activity. Can you educate me on this a little bit?
Yes, correct. Based on the site plan that I have in front of me, the area to the east of the main building, so where you have a truck turn and you have parking, would be a considerable amount of fill behind a 40 to 50 foot retaining wall. So they would have to bring dirt either from the area to the northwest of the site, which would be cut. They'd take dirt from over there and they'd put it behind the wall for fill. I don't know, because volume calculations haven't been done, whether dirt's going to have to be brought in, but there would be a significant amount of grading based on the topography of the site to be done to build the building.
Okay. And one last question. Are there best practice standards that are used to guide the threshold of a property to accept a certain capacity of development? And can you educate me on that? Is there a difference between C1 and M1?
So there's no requirements per se outlined. However, when you look in the Georgia Stormwater Manual and other hydrologic manuals, a commercial site typically is about 85% impervious, and an industrial site is estimated, but this, it can vary to be about 72% impervious because generally those sites are larger. This site overall is, including the buffers, is 62% impervious, but just the developed area, like the area that's behind the retaining walls, is 85% impervious.
Okay. Thank you. That's all that I have.
Any other questions? Anybody?
No, I've got one more question, okay. But this is for Chris Holden.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jean. Chris, identify yourself with a voice record.
My name is Chris Holben, and I live at 325 Lakeshore Drive.
Thank you.
So, Chris, you've stated in several meetings that you've lived at your current location for 40-plus years.
49 years.
And in that time, I know you've seen a lot of new development to include the widening of Peachtree Industrial and the placement of truckloads of fill dirt at the properties in question. I also know that over that time, you've had your pond dredged numerous times. Could you educate me regarding the process and effort required to dredge your pond? Because I know it's no small feat.
The last three times we've used what is called a mudcat. And a mudcat is about the size of a motorhome. And it has a drill bit, like horizontally in front of it. And it just churns up the mud and water. But you have to have a holding pond somewhere. And that's always been on the property behind me. And it's usually about 2 acres. And the mudcat pumps water and silt into this holding pond, and this silt will settle to the bottom, and the water will run out. But now there's really no way to have anywhere for this water to run out. So that would be a big problem now. As far as the cost, I've used Choo Choo Dredging. They come from Chattanooga, Tennessee. They might be out of business. This is 12 years ago. But it's expensive. They charge $5,000 just to bring the mudcat there, another $5,000 to take it out of the pond and take it home. Georgia Power charges $1,000 to drop the power line, and then another $1,000 when they take the mudcat out to put the mudcat on a flatbed. Now, Choo Choo Dredging has always brought in a big crane on a truck, and I don't know how much that cost, but I'm sure it's a lot because this is the only way to get this mudcat out of the pond. And again, I'm not sure if Choo Choo Dredging is even in business now, but the one problem that the developer might have is he's got to have this detention pond. At least it's got to be over an acre of a detention pond. And it takes a long time to have this silt pumped into the detention pond, the silt and water, and let it run out. You have to have a big backhoe in the back to scoop the silt out, and then you have to have a place to put it. That would be the easiest way. The other way, Derry Stockbridge would come in from the road with a big drag line and have to put the silt in trucks. It would be extremely expensive and very messy to Lakeshore Drive. So it's expensive no matter what you do.
Okay.
And again, it depends on how much silt has been put in the pond. The first time, I think it was around 32 dump truck loads. The last time, it was over 50 dump truck loads. So, it was a lot of silt.
And the last time was only 12 years ago.
Uh-huh. That's when the developer brought all the fill in, mm-hmm. and we got into it, and then he disappeared.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
Yeah. So,
in light of the proposed $250,000 bond, does that number, I know you're not a civil engineer, you're not an expert, but does that number sound like it would be enough money to make you whole if there were a significant impact on your pond?
I think it would definitely probably be okay for my pond or our pond. But if it gets into the lake, it really becomes a huge problem, which it could. It could easily get into the lake. It just depends on how much it rains, how much land disturbance is done. So, but to answer your question, I think it would cover our pond.
Thank you.
Yeah.
This is really to the city attorney. What standing does the city have in terms of abating any risk associated with siltation to Chris's pond or the lake?
Well, there's two answers to that question. One is that conditions are appropriate in a zoning to ameliorate the impacts to public health, safety, and welfare as long as they're related to the project and not to the system. And that can, and those conditions can also be used to protect other properties. So, and then the second answer to that question is, in this particular case, the applicant has agreed to this particular condition. One thing that I do want to make a point of, because I don't want, there was an impression left by a speaker last month that the increase in the bond amount would be de minimis once the bond was in place. That may be true in some circumstances if you've got somebody, an entity that has significant bonding capacity and history. That is not the case in this situation. If this particular bond is going to, their premium is going to be a percentage of the bond amount. So if you double the amount of the bond, it's going to double the premium they have to pay.
Anybody else have a question for Chris?
Chris, I was just over there today, and could you comment on how you feel about what I see from there up to PIB?
You mean?
We'll see, I guess.
I have a picture, some pictures of the property, and I can give it to y'all, each one of y'all, if you want to see it. It might be easier to see. It looks like the surface of the moon. That's what it looks like. There you go. This is the 5 acres. And you can see it's just all dirt. Georgia red clay. So do y'all see what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. You can see where the billboard is.
Yeah.
That's in the center of the property. You can see my buffer. And then you can see the 5 acres, which is, there's no trees on it. There's no grass on it. There's no shrubs on it. And the thing right now is that I think I asked y'all to drive by there. It's like a forest now. No water comes off that property. And the one thing that bothers me most of all, I know the silt's coming. You know, twice developers have come in and clear cut the property, and twice they have put huge amounts of silt in the pond. All the people that work beside me tell me the same thing. It just depends on how much it rains and again, how much land disturbance there is. Again, I have an engineer, David Heater works for United Consulting. He's my biologist. Rich Ettinger is my engineer, and I have an arborist. But I did talk to a city planner. His name is Matt Hauser, and this was just a few days ago, because I'm always worried about the water and the silt. But Matt is a city planner, and he had looked at this plat. And he said, Chris, they're trying to put too much on the 5 acres. So now I have a city planner that's, you know, again, I don't mind Panner developing the property as long as it's just done right. That's all I ask. I will say I've spent a lot of money so far. I've spent around $7,410, but to me it's worth it because I'm possibly protecting our pond in Berkeley Lake. Now I know I'm going to have to spend another $3,500 to do a baseline study and another $3,500 to do a baseline study after the development. So I'm having to invest a lot of money to protect our pond and really Berkeley Lake. All righty.
Anybody else?
Well, can I show you one last thing, though? Just to show you how dangerous this piece of property is. The property was in the county when the last developer clear-cut the property. And so I dealt with the county. These are all the people that either came out to my property. There's 27 business cards. Came out to my property, or I talked to you on the phone about the property. And the county just, they tried their best, but they just couldn't get this developer to do what he was supposed to do. So with Lois's help and Steve Sykes, who was president of the homeowners, and Tom Kitchens, who was on the board at that time, the EPD got involved, mainly because of Lois. And the EPD came in, and the next thing I know, when you start getting fined thousands of dollars a day, things started to change. So, again, I want to thank Lee for all her help because she's kind of done all this, a lot of the work on her own. And you can see how many people were involved. And these are all other people that were involved. But these are all county employees. So you can see it's a complicated piece of property. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Mayor, the applicant should have the opportunity to respond.
Okay. Ms. Craigie, would you like to respond? Sure.
I'm just going to pull the conditions, but I believe there was a condition that my client is actually paying for that baseline study. Do you have that nearby? I'm just pulling it here.
I have it. I did confirm that while we were talking. So
okay, so to clarify, one of the conditions is that my client, before earth-moving activities, would do a baseline study of that retention lake on Mr. Holman's property. And that would give you know, what's happening now before any of the dirt moves. And then at the end, there would be that study again to see if there was a difference.
Paid for both times by your client?
Yes, according to the conditions. Do you want me to hit a lot of other things I want to know what specifically you feel. I wanted to point out that because that's a factual issue.
If you heard any other questions that were asked that you wanted to respond to as briefly as possible.
I want to say something. I managed the Lotus Construction Company 2006 to 2016 tenure. The company has international, very big infrastructure construction and design company. I have a very big experience for especially water pipeline, water treatment plant, stormwater management design, etc. My company, 2013, 14, and 15, 10th bigger company in the world. I know what we are talking and what is the red line and issue. The first time Mr. Holborn land has some sediment erosion is big issue, but that time thousand truck coming and dumping. Right now, the different issue. We want to be, we know how can will we control the erosion, maybe double
erosion control, maybe triple, but we know how can do that. And we designed to over-design pond and biology pond. And I think this is not big issue. My career is smallest project, this one, for stormwater issue. Yeah, this one.
On a couple of issues, just to in general, without going too much into detail, because a lot of this detail is in the application, it's in the water, the hydrology study, it's kind of detailed in what's in that, so I don't want to hash that. But I will just state that he said, this needs to be done right. And once again, as we talked last time, this is not a developer. This is someone who's going to own and operate this property and become a neighbor to this community. And the whole goal is that this be done right. This hasn't been done haphazardly. And the engineer working on this is a former Gwinnett County engineer who designed water systems. He's amazing. This is not done halfway. This is done to be right and to last. And every single day, my client is going to be in that building. So if you have an issue, you know where to find him. This is not a developer who builds it and goes away. A lot of time, a lot of money has been put into this. And we're happy to answer any specific questions regarding that that you have. I'm not going to address some of these other issues. I know, Mr. McDaniel, you had a lot of statements. I was going to say, did you want any individual questions answered?
Well, I feel like a lot of my questions need to be answered with changes to the site plan. I don't think this is something you can fix with words.
Is there a question?
My question was, has the applicant considered if the scope and the scale of the building plan can be reduced to any degree? Another question was, has the applicant and the team of engineers considered converting any of the impervious surfaces to pervious? Everything I'm hearing about the bond, I may be willing to let my question about the size of the bond go. It sounds like the $250,000 has been recommended by competent people, so it seems low to me, but...
I would say this project was started, at least I came on board February, so a year ago. The site plan has gone through multiple changes. We've had multiple meetings with the engineers. This is about something that works for the property, works for Peachtree Industrial, and works for the community. A lot of time and effort has been put into this site plan. And maximizing the space you can and putting in a good stormwater system. Yeah, when you create development, there'll be a building. There'll be parking. And it happens with every property in Georgia. You've got to deal with that. And in this case, the solution using the manual is to create an on-site bioretention basin and do it the right way. You know, if you want my client to actually just sit and go through the pieces of the site plan and why things went where they did, we could certainly look at doing that if that's what you want to sit down. And it's a lot going on in the site plan. So if you have very specific questions about that, we have it right here. We can go through it with you if that's what you want to do right now.
So you're unwilling to reduce the scope of the building?
The buildings have been reduced and changed since the original site plan. So to say that they were not reduced or changed would not be accurate.
Lee, can you back that up? They've reduced the size of these buildings?
The smaller building has not reduced in size. Started at 6,900 square feet, went up to, I think, around 11,000 in footprint, and is now at about 7,250. I don't recall the original site plan on the warehouse building. I do also want to clarify a point, and Thomas, just correct me if I'm wrong. The condition on the baseline survey is only pre-development, not post-development. I just want to be clear on the record about that point, because that's how this is written. If you give me a second, I'll see if I can find you the answer to your question. If you want to carry on, I'll pop back in.
The pre-development baseline study that the developer, under the current condition, is required to pay for. The one afterwards, it sounds like Mr. Holman's going to do it one way or the other. If there weren't any evidence of settlement, it may not be necessary. But I heard Mr. Holman say he planned to do one anyway.
Anyone else have a question while we're letting Lee look up stuff?
I have a question.
Mark Jacobson.
I have a question. Is that okay?
Let me make sure our city council, there is a place for public comment on here.
Okay, I was just had a question for this particular thing.
Okay, all right, come ahead and do that.
I just want to get clarification on something that was said earlier.
I'm Mark Jacobson, 40 Lakeshore Drive. I just want to be clear on your business. You're creating a new kitchen, and you go and talk to these people. Are you retaining the slabs? Are the slabs arriving at your place? And are the fabricators then coming and grabbing the slabs and taking them to be fabricated elsewhere, or are they being fabricated on site where you are? So they're taken away from the property. Okay, because I'm in the business, so I know about, all that. So I just want to make sure that pollutant of cutting the stone and all that stuff isn't happening there. Okay. All right. That was what I wanted to address.
Thank you.
I pulled the original application, and according to the site plan that I have, the initial warehouse square footage, and again, I don't have a scale. This is just the label on the site plan. It's 57,144 square feet, and it is now around 61,000.
So it has increased.
That appears to be true from the June site plan. Now, again, it has gone through multiple iterations, but that was the initial application.
Yes, sir.
Good evening. My name is George Chiama. I wanted to address a couple of things that you mentioned. You were concerned about the amount of imperviousness for the site. As the city engineer alluded to, the average imperviousness for the site is about 62-65%, which is quite lower than the average for industrial, that's around 72. So we are not really significantly higher than recommended. And also, one of the concerns is increase in surface runoff and peak flow for the site due to the imperviousness. And we discussed with the city engineers, and we are not only detaining to the minimum, we are actually going above and beyond what is required. We are going to be in 70% of the existing flows. So we are actually attenuating flows to a greater extent than is required by the county or even the state of Georgia. And Mr. Holborn mentioned something about 50 truckloads of dirt from the pond. I was a little curious. Was that sediment transported into the lake, or is that what was? I'm just curious as to how so much dirt went into the lake.
How much silt?
Yeah. You said about 50 truckloads or something?
Yeah, well, now he had to dig up a pipe that he crushed, and so that was the last development.
Okay, all right.
So that was the big problem. He brought it in. 22,000 dump truck loads of fill on the 5 acres.
Oh, okay.
Plus the corrugated pipe. And then the county paid him $850,000 to dig the pipe up, which
I get you.
It was almost 70 feet deep. So then it just left.
Okay. I think I understand now. Yeah. I think if on the site right now there's a pipe, I think a 60-inch reinforced concrete pipe that's buried under 60 feet of dirt. So I can only imagine that a lot of dirt was brought to the site when that pipe was being installed. So I can see how you bring so much dirt, and if you don't control it properly and there's a heavy runoff, it could easily wash into the lake. So it appears that the original contractor had some problems in controlling sedimentation. So I don't think we will bring some debt to the site, but what was brought previously was a lot. You know, but having said that, we're going to put in place best management practices that would make sure that, you know, any eroded soils from exposed soils, any eroded sediments from exposed soils will be contained on site. You know, we're going to go above and beyond. We're going to double sizes of sediment basins where sediment and silt fences are required. We're going to double them. And, you know, if anybody has any suggestions, because anybody wants to review our plans, city engineers or any external consultants will be more than willing to show them our plans. And if they have any suggestions that will improve the erosion control measures, we'll be more than willing to listen. And also, I was suggesting to my client that we have an external consultant monitor the erosion control that I installed. I know that for sites like this or for sensitive sites, we have an independent company that monitors the erosion control measures, especially during rainfall. They want to see how best these measures are holding up and things of that nature. So we've talked about this in detail, so we are very much aware of the potential problems, and we want to assure the panel that we're going to take every possible measure to make sure that, you know, any eroded sediments are contained on site as best as we can. You know, so, yeah.
That's what it is. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Any further question for anybody? Council members? No? Okay. Well, we have a motion and a second. Are we ready for a vote or any further discussion?
I wouldn't think we have a whole lot to think about, so I would entertain a motion to table for the time being.
Okay. All right. Scott moves and Rodney seconds a motion to table this until our next meeting. Okay. Any discussion about that? Okay. All in favor? Thank you. That's unanimous. All right. We have two other issues before us tonight. Under new business, a resolution for adopting the comprehensive plan. Will you speak to us about that, please?
Yes, ma'am. I received notice from the Atlanta Regional Commission that the Department of Community Affairs has approved the 2024 comprehensive plan update. With the resolution before you in your packet, the city adopts the plan as its guide for future decision-making and implementation efforts over the next five-year period when an update will once again be necessary. The document will be available to the public both here at City Hall and on the city's website. It's also available through Department of Community Affairs and the Atlanta Regional Commission. So it's up for your adoption tonight.
Okay. Do I hear a motion in that regard?
I'd like to make a motion to adopt R-24-01, a resolution to adopt the 2024 update of the comprehensive plan as presented.
Okay. Do I hear a second?
I second that motion.
Okay. Rebecca moves and Bob seconds. Any discussion? All in favor? Thank you. That's unanimous. The second item under new business is a recognition of our Berkeley Lake Lens creators and its first winner. I want to thank a few of the people who have made major contributions to this project. Janine Britton was originally the leader of our arts committee and did that in, I think, a very effective way until a huge tree landed on her house, necessitating a major redirection of your time and attention. So we appreciate your efforts. Did a great job. After that, Chris Kimberly took on the leadership role and since then has helped bring this project to fruition. The most difficult part of this has been our desire to create an easy way for citizens to submit their photographs, your photographs, some of you, I hope, electronically. And for the committee members, some of whom are here tonight, to collaborate and judge them on their own computers as well. I think that we are deeply indebted to Scott Brown,
yes,
who worked for many months in an effort to get us to that point where the computer business could be done, with his amazing technical expertise. Scott's passing left a huge hole, not only in our hearts, but in the whole community. For all he had done as president of BLHA, what a load that is, and for his work on this committee. I am so grateful for the intervention since then of Dove Jacobson, who, in an effort to honor his friend Scott and to help our city, picked up the complicated technical side of this project, built a whole website, and resolved every problem as it arose, and there were quite a few. He's got a QR code right back there on the door, so none of you can escape without walking right past it, and he leaves no stone unturned, just like that. That will enable you to, on your way out, to find out how to hook into Dove's amazing website. Special thanks are also due to Jenny Nevins, who has not only served on the committee, but agreed to sponsor prizes for each month's winner in the form of $50 donations to the charity of the winner's choice. That seems to me to be a very Berkeley-like way of celebrating. Tonight, we celebrate the first of our winners, Kim Berry, and you can see her, you're going to get to see her beautiful photograph that the Arts Committee has chosen. Kim, do you want to unveil your beautiful... volunteers that I just mentioned, as well as other members on the Arts Committee, including Britt Collins, who's an artist, as you know himself, Tom Merkel, and Jason Wimette. These people have made something new and good in our community, and I think it'll be a joy to all of us for many years to come. Congratulations and thank you to all of you. This is going to hang in City Hall, and we will also have a revolving electronic display in City Hall in an ongoing way so that anyone who comes in to visit Lee or any of the rest of us will be able to see that anytime they come. Dove, will you stand up and take a bow, please? Stand up and take a bow, please. Is there any other member of the committee here that I think? He had to leave.
Oh.
Anybody else? I think that's
Chris
it.
Chris didn't make it. He's put a lot of
it. He certainly has. Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. Are there any public comments that we have not heard tonight? Yes, ma'am.
I'm Jenny Nevins, 116 Lakeshore. I just had a question about the setbacks you wanted to change to 11 feet along Peachtree Boulevard, I guess it's called now. Is that going to be the building or the parking lot?
It's the building setback.
The building. Mm-hmm. So is that not going to be a visual difficulty?
I'll just give a little bit of context to this issue, and I hope not to bore y'all with too many details. The property has a big jog in it. It really has no impact whatsoever. There are no buildings that are in the location where she's asking for the setback. There can't be because there's a pipe that runs in that part of the lot. The only situation in which I can envision the variance coming into play is if either of the buildings had to shift towards the center and the corners of those were affected by that jog. Currently, none of the buildings are in violation of the 75-foot setback from any direction. They meet the 75-foot setback all around. My understanding, and we went back and forth on this for months, was that that was just in case they might potentially, in the future, need to have some forgiveness on the front setback. As it's currently drawn, that's not the case. And to be fair, if they change the site plan and it's substantive, it has to come back before you guys anyway. So we've been back and forth hashing that out for quite a while.
So it's not going to be the building in a straight line 6 feet or 11 feet off of the edge of the road.
Correct. And let me be clear about this. The edge of the road and the property line are quite different.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Okay.
Jenny, we got site plans we can show you that are online, as a matter of fact, too, that'll make that jog-in part
obviously
easier to see.
If anybody has questions about that, please feel free to talk to me and try to show it
to
you.
Yes, sir.
Carl Rose, 4006 North Berkeley Lake. I just have a quick follow-up question to actually one of Rebecca Spittler's questions on the traffic impact from the applicant. They mentioned that their truck goes out, comes back once a day. They didn't say if they have two trucks or 42 trucks.
He said three. He said three.
He didn't say three?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Carl. Anybody else?
Yes, sir. Marty Britton, 498 Lakeshore Drive. How many trucks are going to be parked on the property at any one time, these 18-wheelers? Or are they coming and then leaving?
18-wheel, one truck.
Parked?
Yeah.
All the time?
Yeah.
Visual to the road? Is it visual to the road?
No, not visual.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
One last thing, Mark Jacobson again. One last thing, I think Chip had mentioned this before about the impervious surfaces. How many parking spots are there, and how many of those can be made to be pervious surfaces that the cars will drive up on, and then whatever goes down through to help with the drainage of the water? That's what I'm curious about.
My name is George Chiama.
Yes, that's a very good question. It's a good idea. We can convert some of these parking spaces to porous pavements.
To what?
Porous pavements.
That's
porous,
what I thought you pavements. Said. Just yeah. Want to make sure.
So, and that would help reduce the surface runoff from the site. So we might consider, you know, it's a good suggestion. And then we might convert some of them to, and that will help to bring down the curve numbers and subsequently the peak flows and the surface runoff that generated on the site. So we could do that. But we want to make sure that it's not an area where you have these big trucks going up there. It's just for maybe workers, you know, visitors coming to look at the, what do you call it, exhibition place and stuff like that for workers. But you don't want to make sure that those big 18-wheelers are driving off by those things. They might collapse.
Yes, we could.
Yeah, that's a very good suggestion. Yeah.
Just to clarify for everybody, based on the site plan that I see, it says 58 spaces around the warehouse. At least half of those probably couldn't be because they're right beside that retaining wall. But then there's 15 spaces around the accessory building. That seems like the paving area around the accessory building seems like the one place where the pervious could make the most impact if the applicant is willing to convert some of that to pervious surface. But
it's not.
Yes,
ma'am. I think
We have the site plan here, and so we'll be here after the meeting if anyone wants to look at the site plan and ask us any questions, because I think looking at the site plan really answers a lot of questions. For instance, I think maybe not everyone understands when you look at this that when a truck comes to delivery, it goes into the building to remove its load. So it's loaded inside or out inside the building.
Lee, isn't that site plan accessible to our citizens?
So the site plan is definitely online. It's in the packet. Sometimes it's easier to look at online because you can zoom in and blow it up. These are the packets, and I know it would have taken me weeks to produce them for this crowd tonight, unfortunately.
You get better, really, with your little fingers. You know, zeroing in on it. It's there. Everybody check it out.
They're all, but I do have, if anybody wants to come to City Hall and look at them, I do have
hard copy.
I do have a hard copy that I can show you.
Anybody else? Yes, ma'am.
Janine Brenton, 498 Lakeshore, or as Jenny would say, part-time at 498 Lakeshore. I just basically want to make a statement to reiterate what Chip said, which I thought, by the way, your presentation was excellent. Rebecca, yours as well. I'm proud of my council members that are taking this seriously, all of you, and spending time on this. But Chip had said something about the size of the building and had they considered it. Now, I know Ms. Krabbe got up and said, well, we've made iterations over the time, but your question was specifically, have they looked at making the building plan smaller? And I don't mean from, you know, last February to April to, it's now. What you guys have in front of you, you folks have in front of you now, I think the question, Chip, if I understood you right, is has it been considered, have they considered making it smaller? And I think that should be, I don't know if y'all have to vote exactly on what's in front of you or if perhaps you pass it and say, but with the iteration that it needs to be 15% smaller or whatever it might be. But I think Chip brought up a great question and it wasn't really addressed. And the other comment I had was for the city attorney. You said that you did not recommend that the bond would cover Lake Berkeley, but why not? I mean, I live, just so you know, when my house doesn't have a tree on it, I will be back in it, and I am very close to where the pond dumps in through that pipe. And any silt that comes in right off my dock will be brown water. So I'm just wondering why you wouldn't have the bond cover Lake Berkeley.
The size and magnitude of the lake, the fact that it would be much more difficult to enforce, the fact that it is also privately owned and it is on the other side of a road, so we're beginning to move away from what might be amelioration of a project impact to might be more of a system improvement. There's any number of reasons those are just four that specific ones about why I don't think that it would be appropriate to try to impose a bond requirement.
I mean, the fact that it is private is what would make me think it's important to cover, because as homeowners and members of Homeowners Association, you know, our dues would have to go way up to cover that kind of cleanup should it happen. And I know I've seen Chris's photos. I've lived here 19 years. I've seen where that bottom part of the lake, it's dark brown.
If the conditions on this particular development, the combination of that particular bond requirement was to incent the developer to do what the engineer got up and said they plan to do, which basically double all the management practices to try to maintain the silt on site. That and the requirement that the post-development flow be reduced, those two things in conjunction were intended to provide as much protection as I think this council can require under the law.
Under the law. Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Delisha Reynolds, 3685 North Berkeley. What recourse is there if they don't do all these things that we've imposed conditions? Something happens, they just don't do it. Or it fails.
I think there's probably a couple parts to your question. If they violate a condition of zoning, then it's a zoning enforcement action that would be taken by the city. That's the simplest answer to your question. And Our inspector, as I understand it, is pretty diligent, especially when with regard to these type of things. And it sounds to me like there's any number of citizens that are going to have their eyes on this project. So if there's a problem, the city's going to hear about it, and there would be a stop work order imposed, and then zoning enforcement action taken.
Steve?
I'm Steve Shores, 326 Lakeshore. The bulk of the time has been spent on the water pollution. What about the noise, the visual, and the air pollution? Those are things that we all have to live with every day. I don't know that any of this has been addressed.
I think light pollution, we've made some good responses to that, but your point about noise pollution and air pollution.
We have noise. We have noise and lighting, both right. Conditions in the conditions to the zoning. Visually and I mean air pollution wise, I don't know what to say about air. But
deliveries and all, Steve, would only be from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Am I remembering that correct?
That's right.
So that affects noise. They couldn't be delivering stuff and banging around after 7 o'clock.
Ms. Reynolds suggested a change to that particular condition to make it clear that it was not that activity was between 7 and 7 was not just the trash pickup, that it was any type of delivery.
Right. Okay. Jenny?
Jenny Nevins, 116 Lakeshore. That just makes me think of something else. I mean, and maybe you've already addressed this, but they're going to be filling, right? Some of the property. Okay. So, and then the building's 40 feet above that. Is there any way to see what that's going to look like in relation to tops of trees at Chris's or any of our other properties that back up to that to know how much of a visual impact it's going to have?
I've had this conversation with people, and I don't know if anybody in this room's ever dealt with this. I don't know if Ms. Craby has or if the engineer. The only thing I've ever seen done in other cities is what's known as a balloon test, which is...
That's what I was going to suggest.
Is to fly something at the elevation that you mm-hmm. expect the finished top of the building to be.
Right.
And then try, and that's something that I have no idea if that's a condition that we can add to this or not. I don't know how we do that. The time I've done that was in a permitting circumstance. It wasn't through a zoning action, so I...
The only time I've ever seen that done is a cell tower.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen it done in a typical building, but I mean, I don't see a reason why you...
I've seen it done a lot in developments, but I don't know.
I just don't know. I don't know if we embed that as a condition. I don't know how to add that in here. That's just a thought. That's something that I've discussed with a couple people I know.
I just think that would be something that we would all like to see. You know, I mean, you say these numbers, but if you could actually look at what it's going to look like from the back of Steve's house, from the back of Chris's house, the front of your house, you know.
Awesome. Yes.
Yes, I took an opportunity to go to that part of Lakeshore. And from Lakeshore in front of Chris's pond, you can see through right now, you can see the actual billboard.
Yeah.
So the billboard is approximately a few feet taller than the proposed building. So if the building comes this way, according to the site plan.
Toward Lakeshore.
Toward Lakeshore, you absolutely will be able to see the warehouse building and the 30-foot retaining wall from Lakeshore Drive.
Both of them?
Yes.
What's the difference between the height of the retaining wall and the top of the building?
They're the same.
They're even.
40 feet.
Oh, so the building is above the retaining wall.
The retaining wall is to bring the rear end of the property up to street level.
So we'll be able to see the entire 40 feet of building?
Pretty much, other than whatever's obfuscated by the 75.
Okay.
Anybody else? Okay, If there are no other comments, I would entertain a motion for adjournment.
Rodney.
I make a motion to adjourn.
Do I hear a second?
A second to motion.
Okay. Rodney moves. Chip seconds. Any discussion? All in favor? Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody.
I see that.
For your time.